Welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, IBM Transaction Analysis Workbench, the Sherlock Holmes of analysis for transaction performance and behavioral problems. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a question and answer session. Today's teleconference is being recorded. In today's teleconference, James Martin III, subject matter expert for IBM Transaction Analysis Workbench, we'll discuss how the IBM Transaction Analysis Workbench automates data gathering, enhances collaboration, reduces the time to fix, and helps you train the next generation of support personnel. At this time, I would like to hand it over to our host, Margaret Wilson, IMS Tools Market Manager, IBM Software Group.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the second IMS Tools teleconference call for 2014. I'm so glad that you could join us today. What we're going to talk about this morning is the Sherlock Holmes of analysis for transaction performance and behavior problems. I'm sure you're kind of wondering just exactly what that is by Sherlock Holmes. Well, we're going to talk about an IBM tool that will help reduce the instrumentation processing of the massive volumes of instrumentation data that you collect every day due to the millions of transactions that your IMS systems are running. Our speaker today will be James Martin, and he'll tell us how IBM's Transaction Analysis Workbench will automate gathering all that data, enhances the collaboration of data from different sources as it's gathering it, reduces the time for fixing problems, and helps you train the next generation of support personnel. So basically, it's the Sherlock Holmes of transaction analysis, crawling through the data, helping you fix it, determining what's wrong, and giving you the opportunity to train new people as well. And with that, I'd like to introduce James Martin. He's our subject matter expert for IBM Transaction Analysis Workbench, and I'm sure most of you know James already. James, welcome. Good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Margaret. And as Margaret said, today we're going to talk a little bit about what we consider to be the Sherlock Holmes of transaction analysis tools for System Z, the IBM Transaction Analysis Workbench for System Z. Starting on the second slide, this is just our common disclaimer that basically says that I may talk about features of the product today as well as the features of the product, and if I do, those features cannot be guaranteed by myself or IBM that they will ever be put out into the field, so they may or may not come to fruition. So you can't hold it against me. You can maybe hold it against somebody, but you can't hold it against me. So moving on to the next slide, this is an agenda of what we're going to talk about today. We're going to start off looking at the big picture on System Z of transactions that execute on System Z, where they come from, who the subject matter experts are, things like that. Second of all, we're going to talk specifically about the tool, IBM Transaction Analysis Workbench for System Z, which has just announced its new release, version 1.2, with a lot of enhancements, especially on the DB2 side. So for all of you IMSers who deal with DB2, which is most of us these days, we've got some really neat features that we've added to the product, and I'll be covering all of them today. As Margaret indicated, we're also going to talk a bit about how the Workbench can help you in the big data arena by identifying transactions that we would consider as exceptions. And we'll go more into that exception process as we get into the presentation. And we're also going to talk about how not only Workbench can help educate new people to IMS or to DB2 or to Kix, whatever the case may be, we can also help application development teams as they roll out new applications in IMS or DB2 or CICS by allowing them to do their own validation testing of their applications and help reduce the instances where applications actually fail due to performance reasons after they've been rolled out. And option 5 that says possible Workbench features, well, that's going to be a list of the new features that will become generally available in the next couple of weeks in version 1.2 of the Workbench, and they're also going to be a few features in there as well. I will indicate as I move through the slides which ones are available in 1.2 and which ones are futures. I've also added some addendum slides to this IMS DB2 problem scenario so that you guys can look at that on your own and see how you would walk through with the tool in solving or determining an issue with an IMS DB2 transaction performance issue. So moving on to the next slide, let's talk about application evolution. And if we look back just a few years to the 1980s, you can see that transactions were, for the most part, simple. And when I say simple, I mean the environments back in those days were much more simple than what we look at today. Your users were usually company employees. You had a transaction manager, which was either IMS or Kix. And if it was early in the 80s, you had IMS databases. And as the 80s progressed, we got this new database that was called DB2 that was introduced. And so you started to see some data being stored on DB2 as well. Now, if you look at that particular environment, you could see that it would probably be fairly simple for someone, one person, for instance, to be a subject matter expert on transactions that executed in that environment. But if we fast forward to today, where our users are not only our company employees, they can be customers out there in the public coming in from the web, they can be automated systems coming in from the web or on some system C. We usually always still have that transaction manager involved, either IMS or Kix, but now where that data is stored is different as well. We not only have IMS and DB2 databases, but we can actually have data that's being stored off-platform on non-Z servers. We can also use things like MQ series or WebSphere MQ to access IMS transaction and Kix transaction. So if we look at that environment that we work in today, you can see that it'd be much more difficult for one person to be a subject matter expert on that environment. Moving on to the next slide, slide 5. When we talk about transactions that execute on System Z, there can be a lot of issues that cause performance issues. And when we look at that, we look at the heterogeneous environments today, and you can see that if a transaction is initiated by Kix, uses DB2, IMS, and vSAM, silo-specific tools that we work with today, which there are many of them out there and many good ones, IMS Performance Analyzer, Kix Performance Analyzer, for instance, DB2 Performance Expert, just to name a few. But those subsystem-specific tools look at subsystems, but they don't look at the interactions between the subsystems. So if I'm looking at a subsystem with a subsystem-specific tool, I may not notice any latencies that might occur by things like interaction between subsystems, like interaction between Kix and DB2 or interaction between Kix and IMS. And I also might not be able to identify any performance issues that are caused by non-subsystem events, like System Z events. Say the system takes a system-wide dump and goes non-dispatchable for 2 seconds. Well, we've just added 2 seconds onto our entire transaction workload. And unless we have a tool that can span all of these subsystems, we may not even know that it happened. So we need to be able to quickly identify performance issues by looking across multiple subsystems, the interactions between those subsystems, and even outside of subsystem events like System Z events. We need to be able to merge all of that instrumentation data together, and we need to be able to look at that transaction lifecycle and see an end-to-end picture across all of the subsystems that it uses to interact. Moving on to slide 6, let's talk a little bit about cross-support and why cross-support, or I like to call cross-support collaboration between subject matter experts in this case, why it can be difficult. Well, I touched on it in the previous slide a little bit, and the fact is that those subject matter experts may be in silos. I talked a little bit about silo-specific tools, so let's talk about the silos that the subject matter experts may be in. Now, silos could mean a lot of things. It could mean that those subject matter experts sit in different parts of the building in their own cubicle area, or it could mean that they're separated by continents. One could be in the U.S. and one could be in Tokyo, or they could be separated by states. It could be a lot of different things that mean silos. But cross-training inside those silos may be difficult, and it takes a lot of time with the current tools that we're given, the silo-specific tools that have to crawl through this data. And the third point is probably the most key point, is they may be unable or unwilling in most cases to cooperate easily. It seems like IMS guys really struggle talking to DB2 guys and to Kix guys and things like that. So we really need to have a cross-support tool that allows us to communicate more easily, or allows us to actually speak to one another without actually having to speak to one another in some cases. And what would that cross-platform tool really achieve? Well, we feel like probably the most valuable asset in today's world, especially with the staff reductions that we keep seeing when we go to customer shops, is conservation of a subject matter expert's time. In certain situations, in customer shops that I've been to, there are situations where I've been to customer shops and there was one person that was the IMS systems programmer, the IMS DBA, and the IMS application support team. It was all one person. So you could see how that one person's time may be stretched a little thin across trying to manage all three areas. So his time would be a very much a limited resource. So being able to give him a good cross-platform tool to look across multiple subsystems would be a very valuable asset to him, and possibly give him the ability to have other people, let's call them first responders, people who maybe take problem calls that may or may not be part of the team. In this case, if it's a single person, they wouldn't be part of the team, but they need to be able to do some of the heavy lifting for this subject matter expert, do things like gather information for him, maybe run reports for him and things like that. And we'll get into how the tool will help us to achieve that as we move through the presentation. The transparency of information is very important as well. A lot of times we've found in problem-solving situations that involve multiple subsystems, you may have one team, the IMS team, that's looking at one set of data, but you have the DB2 team, for instance, have collected their own set of data that they're looking at. Well, what happens if the timestamp on that data is off just by 15 or 30 seconds? Well, we would be looking at very different data on both teams, so each team might not see the actual problem. So we need to have transparency of information and the ability for everyone to be looking at the same data when we're trying to work on a problem, and we'll look and see how the tool is going to help us with that as well. And I think subject matter experts really need to see the big picture, we want to call it, or the benefit of the collaboration. And this can mean a lot of things, but mostly reduction of the time that that subject matter expert has to spend on that problem and reduce time to resolution, because the ability that we have to identify that problem across multiple subsystems, and we also have the ability now to use a tool like this to cross-train our first responders, whoever they might be, and subject matter experts in other areas. So maybe the DB2 guys will learn a little bit about IMS, and the IMS guys will learn a little bit about DB2. I know the tool has done that for me. I'm mostly an IMS guy, but I've learned quite a bit about DB2 log flows and DB2 ifkid traces, counting traces, performance traces, just by using the tool, and I would have never gained some of that knowledge without the tool. So let's move on to the next slide, and now we're going to introduce the transaction analysis workbench for System Z. And that's right, I said System Z. This is not a subsystem-specific tool. It's not an IMS tool, not a DB2 tool. It's a System Z tool, and it analyzes transactions that execute on System Z, no matter where they're executing. If you've heard me speak about the workbench before, you might have noticed some similarities between it and another tool that IBM offers on the IMS side called the IMS Problem Investigator. But let me assure you that these are very different tools. Where the IMS Problem Investigator only gives you the ability to look at the IMS log, the CQS log, the IMS Monitor, IMS Connect information, and the DB2 log, you can see there are many, many more instrumentation data sources that are available to the workbench, counting SMF and performance SMF data for DB2, SMF data for CICS or CMF data, WebSphere log extract SMF data, accounting SMF data for WebSphere. So you can see that the instrumentation data sources are quite expanded for the transaction analysis workbench, and we'll see some examples of how we actually can look across these multiple subsystems and see the transaction lifecycle and some of the neat features we've added to the product as well to allow you to quickly identify which piece of instrumentation data that we'll actually be looking at using the tool. And as I've said several times, Workbench is really not just for IMS, because it merges those multiple subsystem instrumentation data sources and presents that consolidated cross-system view of a transaction lifecycle that we really, really need to identify performance issues in our transaction workloads. And it does this by using an interactive ISPF dialog or a browse session, and it allows us to do things like find certain attributes, filter on certain attributes, format the log instrumentation records. And when you know how to work with one log type, say you're very familiar with the problem investigator and you're very familiar with working with the IMS log, well, you'll know how to work with all of them. So working with the IMS log is very similar to working with SMF data from DB2 or working with CMF or SMF data from KIX. And we've also added some support for combined exception reportings in the arenas of things like KIX DB control reporting. KIX DB2 and IMS DB2 are now supported as well. And we also offer various standalone SMF batch reporting in the workbench that is standalone and not dependent upon either one of the PAs, KIX PA or IMS PA. Now, if you are a KIX PA or an IMS PA customer already, you can also leverage that tooling from the workbench, which means I can run IMS PA reports and KIX PA reports from the workbench, allowing it to be a framework, as you might see, for transaction analysis on System C. Moving on to the next slide, slide 10. One of the ways we do a lot of these things is by using a session manager approach. And the session manager approach allows you to use a repository. The workbench has its own repository to store all of this information. And some of the things that are stored inside of a session are information about when the problem occurred, what time the problem occurred, and also any of the data that is gathered about that problem. Not only the data being gathered, but an automated collection of the data as well. We allow you to automate the collection of SMS data, automate the collection of IMS data, automate the collection of DB2 log data. All the instrumentation data that you can collect can be automated using the workbench. And once that data is gathered, it is extracted from, say, the IMS SLIDs, for an example, into a PDS data set, and it is associated with that particular session until you delete it. Therefore, we have the data transparency that we were talking about in one of the previous slides, where everyone will be working from the same session and looking at the same data. Now, if we needed that first responder or somebody to run some reports for, we could also run those reports using the session manager. And once those reports were run, they would be saved into the last point, the analysis history, for subsequent runs of the reports if we needed to do them at a later time. We can collect notes about our analysis in the session, and those notes will be saved in the analysis history. Any analysis notes that we keep, all will be saved in the analysis history. Data tags, we can tag log records that we might suspect of being that problem child log record inside the transaction lifecycle, so that in the case that I was an IMS systems programmer, for instance, and I identified something that I might identify as a DB2 issue, I could tag that DB2 record, and that would allow me to leverage my DB2 team, my DB2 subject matter expert, and point him to the tag that I created for that particular DB2 log record or DB2 IFKID SMF trace record, and he would be able to go directly to that point in the analysis where I left off. He wouldn't have to collect the data. He wouldn't have to go out and look to see what time it was. I would take him right into the investigative process where I left off. Now, that last point that says you can throw away your Big Chief tablets, well, for those of you who don't know what a Big Chief tablet is, it's a legal notepad, but it was yellow, and it was called a Big Chief. And my father, who's been in this business for many, many years, used to tell tales of the fact that back in the old days when they were working on problems that involved multiple subsystems, they had to use these Big Chief tablets to take notes and make tags and things like that. Well, we've taken that ability and put it into the workbench so, as it says, you can throw away your Big Chief tablets. All of that using the session manager in the workbench. Let's move on to the next slide, which is slide 11. And as I've said several times, this is a tool for problems in the big picture, a tool for transactions that execute on System Z. It's for first responders and subject matter experts, no matter who those first responders may be. In some cases, and if it's a larger shop, your first responders may be help desk type people who have no knowledge of any of the subsystems. And as I said, we need to make sure that those first responders can do some things, like collect the data that's required to work on the actual issue, so that the subject matter expert doesn't have to do that. This tool is also good for subject matter experts in different areas. It allows them to collaborate without even having to talk to one another. just by passing their analysis sessions from one to the other, asking each other questions inside the analysis history, and allowing them to answer each other's questions back and forth. It provides a lifecycle view of the transaction activity across all of these subsystems. And we feel like it's going to change the way a problem can be resolved by allowing everyone to see this transparent data and relate the way the subsystems are interacting with one another. And as I've said several times, ensure that everyone's looking at the same data and looking at the same problem. We not only use IMS information, we use SMF information, we use trace information, we use log records. We use all types of different instrumentation data to show you where the problem could be in your transaction workload. And one of the biggest issues that we hear most customer shops is, if there is a first responder in their shop, let's say a help desk in most cases, when a problem comes in, the limit of that help desk's involvement is they will take the problem, the call, and they will maybe open a problem ticket in the problem tracking system, and they will assign it to whoever has reported that problem to the IMS systems program or to the DB2 CBA or something like that, without even really considering that they could be useful in trying to see where the problem really needed to be assigned. Well, we hope that by giving them the ability to use a tool like the Transaction Analysis Workbench, they'll be able to do some of those menial tasks like automated collection of the data, like running some reports, and use what we call workflows, which we're going to talk about a little bit later in the presentation as well, to actually determine where the correct assignment of that problem is. Because we all know that as subject matter experts, it would be really, really nice to have some assurance that if we get a problem assigned to us, it really is our problem. Because in most cases, when we talk to these subject matter experts, they say, well, it doesn't matter if it's my problem or not. That first responder is always going to assign that problem to me, and 99% of the time, it's not my problem, and I have to end up sending it back or sending it to another team. So wouldn't it be nice to have confidence that when the problem was assigned to you, it really was your problem? Moving on to slide 12, this is an example of a transaction, but in this instance, it's an IMS DB2 transaction. And you might take notice that all of the different instrumentation data sources in this case are different colors. Well, that's a neat little feature that we have in the product called highlighting that actually allows you to nominate colors, very similar to the way you would do if you were using code in Rex or something like that. You can highlight each of the instrumentation sources to give you a really, really easy ability to see where that instrumentation data is coming from. In this instance, we're looking at the green is the IMS information, IMS SLIDS information. This in blue is the IFKID information or the SMF data from DB2. And in red, you can see that is clearly the DB2 log. But some of the neat things about the product are some of the features that allow you to do and see latencies inside the transaction lifecycle. You can see this is an IMS DB2 transaction. We have the O1 record, which is the input message, and then we have the message in queue, where it's the message being put onto the queue. And if I were to change, in this particular instance, the view from wall clock time on the right over here and use this E-line command and change that to elapsed time, I would then be able to see the delta difference between each event in the transaction lifecycle. And that would really allow me to quickly identify issues in the transaction lifecycle that I might need to investigate. In this instance, you can see there's clearly a 1.4-second processing time jump between this SQL fetch, C1, and the save point in the DB2 log. So there was something going on in there. Knowing what I know about DB2 now, I would also know that there is a 58 IFKID accounting record that's down here below where you can see that would give me much more information about what was happening in this particular fetch call. I also want to draw your attention to the fact that we've really, really made some strides on the DB2 side with the product, and one of the things we were told by the DB2 folks was that to make this a viable DB2 tool, it had to be able to demystify the stored procedure. And I'm sure most of you, if you work with DB2, are familiar with stored procedures. Well, one of the things that I learned from the tool is that there is an IFKID trace record in DB2 that tells you when you've entered into a stored procedure and when you've exited a stored procedure. And that's a 233-380 IFKID trace record pair. And you can see there's two of them right below the 177 package allocation, stored procedure entry. And then underneath that, you can see the events, the 177 package allocation, the SQL update, and the information that happened inside the stored procedure until you get down to the next 233.380 pair, which is the stored procedure exit. So you can actually see events inside of the stored procedure with the workbench. It's really, really a neat tool. You'd have to be collecting the correct IFKID trace records to do this, and not all customers collect these because they're very voluminous. But we also understand that in the situation when we're working on a difficult problem, we're going to collect whatever instrumentation data that we need. Now, what's not shown here are the slash trace records for IMS, like slash the DLI trace and things like that. Now, if we were collecting those records, we could merge those into this lifecycle as well, and any other instrumentation data sources that were involved in this problem. If we were using WebSphere MQ or MQ series, we could merge that in here as well. If we move on to the next slide, slide 13, you can see this is the same picture that we just looked at, but the difference is this is a KIX DB2 transaction lifecycle view. And if you look here, we've used, instead of the E line command, we've used the R line command, which now switches wall clock time to relative time, relative to the point in the transaction lifecycle to where we issue the R command. And then we get to see the relative time difference starting from that point of relativity. And you can see that here I have a fairly significant jump between the 007 and 018 read IO in and scan in. But the most important thing about the relative time difference is that I can move this point of relativity to any place in the transaction lifecycle that I would like. And from that point, I will see relative time. So if there are events before where I place my point of relativity, I will see negative times behind it and positive times ahead of it. Moving on now to slide 14. Let's talk a little bit about how the workbench can help you with what we want to call big data in identifying transaction exceptions in instrumentation data. In most shops today, it's common for big IMS systems to create anywhere from 200 to 400 gigabytes of log data a day. Now, that's one IMS system, and in most shops, they have more than one IMS system, so that's per IMS system. And when you couple that with their DB2 database systems that can easily create the same amount or more DB2 log data, along with 20 to 50 million SMF records today, well, I would consider that to be big data. And if the traditional tools that we've talked about trying to analyze this data created, they really just can't keep up anymore. And as we enter into cloud computing on the mainframe and the mining of traditional instrumentation data, we really need to look at how we approach the initial processing of this large amount of data. And we need to maybe adjust our approach to our performance evaluations. And where we currently evaluate overall system performance, maybe we should consider changing to identifying transactions that are beginning to show signs of problems ahead. And when we do this and we find these transactions and maybe prevent them from becoming critical issues, we all have online monitors in our shop, and they alert us to critical issues as they occur. And the problem with that being is that when it's a critical issue, I like to call these online monitoring tools I have pain now tools. So if I have pain now, I can use my online monitor to cancel the transaction or whatever I need to do to stop that pain. But wouldn't it have been nice had I been able to identify that transaction before it actually reached a crisis state? Moving on to the next slide, slide 16. Well, the solution that we want to put out there, we call exception processing. And rather than parsing all the fields in every record, which is expensive and takes a long time, the workbench exception processing is optimized to only look at the fields that are necessary to identify records that belong to what we call an exception, or that's any user-based specific criteria. In this case, or at common time, that really is limited to long response times and or transactions that have ended. And the result is a file that's really much smaller than your original instrumentation data file because, let's face it, if we're creating hundreds of thousands of transactions a day and 80% of them are executing just as they should be, do we really, really need to spend time looking at transactions that are performing well? No. We really need to be able to focus on transactions that are performing poorly, and exception processing allows us to do just that. And after it goes through this exception processing phase, it creates a transaction index, which is a workbench term for files whose record contains the transit information about transactions that are executing on System Z. And some subsystems, like Kix and DB2, they already natively generate log records that serve this purpose. For Kix, it's the SMF110. For DB2, it's the IFKID3 or the SMF101. But for IMS, there is no single log record that contains the information spanning a complete IMS transaction. So Workbench consolidates multiple records for each transaction into one IMS transaction index record per transaction, and these contain additional calculated field values that don't exist in the individual original IMS log records, things like overall transaction response times and things like that. Moving on to slide 17. Here's an example of what that IMS transaction index record looks like if we were to create that exception index. Now, this exception index was created to show IMS transaction records with excessive processing times. I believe I created it using a 0.5 processing time. But that may still leave me with 10,000 or so records. Well, the product also allows me, as I said earlier, to build filters against this exception index. And I could gradually reduce the amount of index records that I saw by just creating a quick filter that was keyed by processing time. And maybe I started my exception indexes with half a second. Well, I might increase that to a second or 1.5 seconds or 2 seconds. And as I did, I would gradually reduce the amount of transactions that were candidates for investigation until maybe I got down to a list of 100 or 50 or whatever I thought was manageable. And on this example, you can see I've got a couple here, one with a processing time of 72.6 seconds. Now, I don't know very many shops out there today that would allow you to have a processing time of 72.6 seconds, so that one would probably be an ideal candidate for investigation. I could then use the TX line command on this index record and merge it with the other instrumentation data that I've collected to give me that transaction lifecycle view that we saw a few slides earlier, and quickly identify any latencies inside of that lifecycle using elapsed time once again. Moving on to slide 18, as I said, consolidate those multiple records, or in case they already have a native record that creates that. But currently in the workbench, we give you that support for Kix, for DB2, and for IMS. Now, coming in the future, we hope to provide the same information for WebSphere MQ, but that's a possible future. Moving on to slide 19, well, now we're going to talk a little bit about how the Transaction Analysis Workbench can help application development teams and help them roll out new applications for IMS or DB2 or Kix or whatever subsystem that we might be talking about. Moving on to slide 20, what are some of the things that we really, really fear when we roll out new applications? Performance is one issue. An application really needs to not fail for performance reasons when it's rolled out. Because once it's been rolled out into a production environment, what is the cost for this application failing due to performance reasons? And was performance part of the validation testing for that application? And if it was part of the validation, then who was doing the validation and what were the criteria they were using? And probably some of the other questions are listed on this poll as well. Does the evaluation occur at the transaction level? And what's the cost of the performance validation testing? And what's the cost of the validation testing versus the cost of failed rollout due to performance? And we've talked about it several times, the reduction in staff sizes and systems programmers, reduction in the amount of time that they have to help the applications team can really become an issue as well. Some other inhibitors to the application team using the data or the instrumentation data of multiple subsystems wherever they're developing their application. The value of that instrumentation data may not be known to them. They may not know what's available to them and how to use it if it was. And the workbench is really not a traditional development tool, so that may be make it a little more unfamiliar to them as well. Probably the bigger issue is they really probably don't understand, in most cases, how they would obtain the data, or they may not be allowed to access the data. They may not be allowed to access certain systems parts. They may not have access to the IMS logs. and very, very limited knowledge in most cases of tools like IMS Performance Analyzer, KIX Performance Analyzer, and how to use those tools against the instrumentation data if they realize how to get a hold of it. And we've made this point several times as well, maybe limited access to systems programmers' time as well. And they may be really, really reluctant to bother those systems programmers in most cases because they know just how busy they are. Move on to slide 22. Some of the ways the Workbench can really help the application teams when they're developing their new applications is by automating the collection of instrumentation data. The application developer doesn't really need to understand where he's getting the data from, because the subject matter expert or the systems programmer, whoever the case may be, can set up the tool using their development environments to automate the collection of that data and automate the collection of all the subsystems involved in their application development. We can also use the tool, like I said, to leverage other tooling like KIX PA and IMS PA to allow the application developers to perform their own automated reporting of validation performance tests. And the neat thing about that is not only can they use the tool to run those reports, they can save those reports into the analysis history in the session manager and compare them from day to day or from week to week, however they are measuring their performance. So really, really valuable tool there in, on the application side, be able to compare their results from day to day or week to week. And it provides easy recognition of validation testing against expected results. If they're expecting that the transactions using their applications are all going to execute in less than half a second, well, they could really quickly set up an exception process using the tool, like we showed earlier, to identify transactions using their application that are executing outside of that half a second expected performance. And once they do identify those exceptions, they can use that transaction lifecycle view to actually identify what part of their transaction is causing the problem and help them correct that application. Maybe they've written a bad SQL call, or maybe, you know, their DLI call is not coded correctly. But they would really never have been able to see that without seeing how their applications are affecting the log, in this case the IMS log or the DB2 instrumentation data. Not to mention the fact that if they do run into an issue, a serious issue that they can't get past on their own, they can now go to the systems programmer, who has limited time, as we've said several times, and take them right into the investigative process where they've gotten to. And the systems programmer doesn't have to spend a lot of time collecting data and trying to get into the investigative process where they were. They can come right in where the application development team has left off, offer their advice, help them fix it, whatever the case may be, but actually allows them to facilitate that collaboration with systems programmer and maybe even other application development teams. We hope the sky's the limit. Moving on to slide 23, as I said in summarization, we automate tasks that are unfamiliar to most application teams: data acquisition, transaction analysis, lifecycle, exception reporting, other types of reporting, collaboration with other experts, and analysis of the application performance testing information. Very, very, very crucial for those validation performance tests to be done and correct before that application is rolled out into production. Moving on to slide 24. Here's some more new features in version 1.2 of the Workbench and some possible futures as well. I'm not going to read through these because I have slides that cover all of the things on this slide, but this is just for your information. You can read it on your own. Moving on to slide 25, some of the combined exception reporting available to you in Workbench version 1.2. The first one is combined KIX DB control exception reporting. Now, before this particular report was created, if you had a workload that was executed by KIX and was using IMS databases or KIX DB control, it was still your responsibility to do all of the heavy lifting to associate the KIX side of that transaction with the IMS side of the transaction and combine the two together. You had to match the Apple IDs with the TRAN codes and things like that. So it was very, very difficult sometimes to do the heavy lifting that was involved and may involve lots of sheets of papers to do so. Well, in the Workbench, we've given you combined reporting that really, really does the heavy lifting for you. And here is an example of what that KICS DB Control Summary Report looks like. You can see up at the top, here is the KICS information about the transaction, and right below it is the IMS information about that same transaction, the OA counts, things like IO times, sync point times as well. And what's really neat about this report is the sync point times and the O-thread times for FastPath. And in some cases, the DASD replication and mirroring that we see used in a lot of shops today can cause performance delays that can really be difficult to diagnose because they really only show up in these sync point and O-thread times. So if you're having some issues with performance and you can't seem to find anything else, this might be a really, really good report to go to. Just check and make sure that your phase one and phase two sync point times or your fast path O-thread times are not excessive. Moving on to slide 27, we offer the same type of reporting for IMS and DB2. Now, I know this says a TAW future, but this is no longer a future. This is reality with version 1.2. We also offer in version 1.2 the same combined exception reporting for KICS and DB2. So we allow you to merge that data together, and you don't have to do the heavy lifting to see the information that you need to see. And in some IMS performance analyzer, you used to be able to generate this KICS DB control batch report, but you had to manually modify the JCL to do so. Well, in the version 1.2, we now give you the ability to generate these combined batch reports using the ISPF dialog, which makes it much, much simpler to do without having to know how to edit the JCL, which can be sometimes complicated, sometimes not, depending upon your level of knowledge of the product. Moving on to slide 30, we also give you the ability to generate different types of transaction indexes or exception indexes from the ISPF panels as well. Where before we only offered IMS transaction index, you can see we now offer SMF transaction index requests as well. And right below there, you can see I have exception criteria information, response time, transaction, ABIN. And I also have the ability to build filters and use filters against the creation of those indexes as well. But just be mindful that if you use filtering criteria, that's going to increase the time it takes to create these indexes because it will expand upon the tightly focused processing of the exception process and include the fields in the filter, and it really will make you parse through a lot more data to create those indexes. Moving on to slide 31, enhanced support for DB2 trace records. There is a lot of DB2 trace records out there, but some of the most important things that we've done in version 1.2 is that when we originally put the product out in version 1.1, we were thinking in the IMS world, most of the log codes in IMS use the hex decimal format. So we put these out as hex 66 records. Well, the DB2 folks were very quick to respond to us and tell us that, well, we don't write our trace records in hex. We actually have three-digit decimal codes for our IFKID records, and that's how we identify them. So we very quickly responded to that by offering the ability to present the DB2 IFKID trace records as three-digit log codes, as shown here in this particular example. And we support many, many, many of the IFKID trace records. I think we're up to the point where we're supporting just about all of them now. There may be a few out there that we don't know about, but if there are, I don't know that. So moving on to slide 32, I can also select any one of those DB2 IFKID records, and the product will format them for me. If you're familiar with the problem investigator, you're probably familiar with the looks of this screen. But in this case, I've formatted an IFKID trace record, and I've got some really neat information in these trace records and a lot of very valuable information. But me being an IMS guy, it might be a little muddled, or I might not really understand what I'm looking at, especially in the DB2 world. Well, the product is really, really helpful by giving me the ability to, if I have a question about a particular field inside of the formatted record, I can always place my cursor on the field name, hit the enter key, and I will get a pop-up box that describes the field to me. If it's a calculated field, it'll tell me how it's calculated. If it's a flag field, it'll tell me which flag bits are on and which ones are off. Really, really good on the educational side, and we've touched on the educational benefits of using the product. This is one of them as well. Moving on to slide 33, We've talked a little bit about highlighting, which allows you to look at different instrumentation data sources in different colors. But I also want to point out the fact that you can also request to prepend on the log sequence number, or LSN view, with the log type, which helps you even more clearly identify where that instrumentation data is being sourced from. You can see the three-letter prepend is either IMS, DTR, which is DB2 trace, or DB2, which is DB2 log, or it would say CICS if it was CMF data, so on and so forth. And this is an option that you can enhance using the dialog up the workbench. Moving on to slide 34, the more enhanced support for DB2 trace records, we introduce what we call trace level for IFKIDS. Now, these aren't related to trace classes, which some of us may be familiar with. They're really two different concepts. The ISPS dialog trace command filters IFKID records to show only the specified trace level. And you do this by, on the primary command line, issuing the command trace in 1 through 4. Now, the Workbench User's Guide documents a list of the IFKIDs for each trace level with a sample start trace commands for collecting those trace levels. And you can see that as I show, trace level 4 will show me all the available trace records that I'm collecting. And as I step progressively down through 3, 2, and 1, it will begin to reduce the amount of volume of trace records I have on my screen, because these trace records can be very, very, very voluminous. So they may present several screens, and as I'm really trying to initially look at the problem, I may not need to see all of that information at one time, and it gives me the ability to quickly reduce the amount of volume on the screen and maybe get that transaction lifecycle view down to 1 or 2 screens so I can see where those latencies are occurring in the transaction lifecycle. And then as I see those latencies, depending upon where they occur, I can then increase the amount of trace information that I might see so they can give me some help to pinpoint where exactly that latency is inside the transaction lifecycle. Moving on to slide 35. Workflows and session templates is another introduction in Workbench 1.2. And we see that the session template in the workflows could really, really be effective in helping those first responders that we have talked about several times. The session template or session workflow allows the subject matter expert to create a session or a session template that a first responder can create a session from that will include, say, let's just talk about the rule of 80-20, where 80% of our problems are caused by 20% of our transactions. We might create templates for that 20% of transactions that cause us problems on a regular basis. And the subject matter expert could create a template that would include all of the subsystems that were involved in that transaction's execution. And he could then assign workflow tasks to that first responder. Some of those first tasks might be collect the data for this particular problem, or specify the time for the problem. Then second task, collect the data. Third task, run this specific list of reports. Fourth task, maybe if there's a more skilled first responder, you can have them look at metrics inside of the reports and assign that problem to the correct subject matter expert and hopefully give that subject matter expert some confidence that if a common problem comes in for sure, that problem is going to get assigned to the correct subject matter expert. Also, it will allow first responders maybe to create new templates or create new sessions for problems that come in as they are new problems. We'll use the existing templates that use the same types of subsystems. Moving on to slide 36, also available in version 1.2 is our new Eclipse-based rich client platform, or GUI interface, for the transaction analysis workbench. Now, in this initial release of the GUI, we're only providing a subset of the ISPF features. And in this case, they were really geared towards first responders. Now, a first responder can come to the GUI because a lot of times first responders might or might not be familiar with ISPF. They can log in through the GUI, and they can create sessions from the GUI. They can execute workflows from the GUI. And they can look at reports from the GUI. And then there's a lot of things that you can do in the ISPF world, and there's a lot of things you can do in the GUI world. And I'm very much an ISPF person. But I also realize that there are some things that you can really do in a GUI that you can't do in the ISPF world. And in my opinion, one of those things is viewing reports. Now, say I had a workflow, for instance, that I assigned to a first responder, and I wanted him to run 8 or 10 reports associated with the problem. And I wanted to be able to view those reports quickly, jumping between them. Now, in the ISPF world, I would have to have multiple TSO sessions or at least multiple screen splits inside of a TSO session, but I would have to jump from screen to screen to screen to screen. Well, in the GUI world, we don't have to do that, as reports are shown to us as tabs inside the GUI, and I can quickly jump between tabs in the GUI and jump between reports. You can also see up at the top, I have the ability to do things like locate values and find values inside of the reports that I'm looking for. So quickly identify metrics that I may be looking specifically for, things like that. So we really included this rich client platform to assist those first responders, no matter who they are out there, by them not needing to really understand that they're logging on to ISPF or TSO to do these tasks. And they can execute those workflows really quickly by going in, ticking a box that says submit all, and then submitting it, and it will submit those workflow tasks serially for them and run in serialization, boom, 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 and give them the output. And then all they do, it's a one-stop shop, one click, and you're done. Really, really nice. Moving on to slide 37, this is one of the possible futures that I am going to talk about. One of the things that we do understand would be possible in the future that we might get some requests that you be able to do the investigative process that we've talked about. Look at the transaction lifecycle using the GUI. There's some really neat things that you can do in the GUI world, again, in this area, that you can't do in ISPF, and this is one of them. And this is an example of what we feel like that investigative process might look like. And you can see that the GUI would give you the ability to look at things like stored procedures or message switches and look at them from the point of a nested sequence. And you can see here's that stored procedure entry, that DTR-233, and then the events under there are nested or indented as they occur, and as subsequent events occur under those indented, they are further indented. And I also be able to highlight elapsed time differences between events and give them a color, and you can see that any time, say I put that difference to be a second, in this case, any time I exceeded that designation, I would get a big glaring red mark like this 1.6 seconds. That would indicate I have a latency right there inside of my stored procedure. This is, of course, a future, so it may or may not happen, but we would love to get some feedback from the customer world to understand if this could be something that they thought might be useful to them in the GUI world. Moving on to slide 38, we've talked about all of this, the automated SMF file selection, which was made available in 1.2. I'm not going to go into this other than to let you know that it's SMF data for DB2, SMF data for kicks, doesn't really matter. We've automated the collection of that data, making it much easier for that first responder to collect that data so that subject matter expert can use it to investigate the problem at hand. A new report, an SMF report that's offered in the workbench, is the DASDIO report, which uses SMF type 42 subtype 6 records to analyze the performance of dataset IO, including read and write frequency, DASDI response times, cache usage. And you can specify selection criteria to limit the report to job names, data set names that match particular types of patterns that you might be looking for. These selection criteria really enable you to create reports for specific systems or subsystems and their data sets. And maybe, for example, you might want to analyze the performance of a DB2 data set IO. You could specify a job name pattern of DB2 Aster or something like that and a data set name pattern of DSNDB Aster or something like that. Give you a lot of flexibility here, but the main point here is that we all maybe spend a lot of money on this fast DASDI that gives us a lot of performance today. We want to make sure that DASDI really is giving us the performance that we're expecting. Moving on to slide 39, provided some more information for you guys here. Here's a link to the IBM DB2 and IMS Tools website, a link to the IBM Transaction Analysis Workbench for System Z website. This is my father's contact information, Jim Martin, my contact information, and we welcome any questions or any comments about the product or anything you might like to see in the product, things like that. And with that, I'm going to wrap it up and turn it back over to the operator for questions.
Thank you, James. Now we'd like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a Q&A session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time that you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Question 1. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. Or if it was low, press star 3. Question 2. Was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. Or if it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Question 3. As a system programmer and or a database DBA, would you like to be able to more easily identify transaction and database problems? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. If not sure or need more information, press star 3. Question 4. Does your company plan to invest in analysis of information technology, big data, from you, transaction, and database systems? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. Or if not sure or need more information, press star 3. Question 5. Would your application teams benefit from analyzing transaction behavior and performance without assistance from systems programmers or DBAs in their testing environments? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. Or if not sure or need more information, press star 3. And question 6. We hope that you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you're interested in receiving information on this solution. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And that concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. And our first question will come from David Berry of UPS.
Yes, thank you. I would like to know whether we can use with this tools information data from a log stream or if it has to be from a dumped log or SMF data set.
The product does give you the ability to use live log streams as well as dumped data sets for SMF data.
That's great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And our next question will come from Hari Shanamugarasan with Hari's Database Analyst.
In the example where you were showing exceptions for IMS transactions, it had, for example, you know, processing time of 82 seconds and we'll say, you know, 71 seconds CPU. Is there an option that allows you to, for those two items of interest, to get the summary breakdown of where that time is being spent? So, for example, you know, it has 82 seconds elapsed time, but you'd sort of like to know that 70 seconds of that was in DB2, you know, 10 seconds in MQ, and a tenth of a second in actual IMS. So is that available?
Yeah, that's a really good question, as a matter of fact. And it is available, but it is kind of a little bit of a complex process if you want to actually see those piece by piece. We give you the ability with the product to build exception indexes for different subsystems. So you could build one for IMS alone, DB2 alone, and or KIX alone. So with that being said, you could build an exception index for each of those individual subsystems and see the processing time just inside that subsystem. Or you might consider, in a certain case, maybe possibly if it was an IMS DB2 workload, say, running that exception report that I showed you in the DB control area in the slides. We have that also available for, say, an IMS DB2 workload. So you could leverage those numbers and see them all presented to you in one view, you know, and you wouldn't have to try to figure out where the latencies were. You'd see them inside of DB2 and if they were in IMS. I hope that answered your question.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, that is star one if you'd like to ask a question. And we do have a follow-up question from Hari.
In one of the example slides, it was a case where it's doing a scan, and for the sake of argument, it's taking like 1.2 seconds or 1.4 seconds. Do you have the ability to see that there's a loop and that particular DB2 activity, although it's only using, we'll say, 1.4 seconds, is actually being executed, you know, 50 times and is therefore, you know, the major cause of your long response time. So the sort of the aspect of, you know, sort of getting the idea of the looping or summarizing at a package level, you know, that kind of idea, which you have in some of the DB2 tools.
Well, you know, and I would like to say that you could. I would be stretching it a little bit because you could see that, but the caveat on it is that we've designed this as a framework for transaction analysis, and in that framework process, we always intended you to be able to leverage outside tooling, things like IMS Performance Analyzer, DB2 Performance Expert, and things like that, and be able to build the reports using those tools, but actually be able to run them from the workbench if you wanted to do that. So you could add that information to your analysis history, but unfortunately, we didn't design the product to replace the individual subsystem tooling that's out there today. We just really provided it to enhance it and to bring all of that information to one place. So when we're looking across that information, then we can really quickly see, okay, well, we've done the investigative process for the IMS side and for the DB2 side, and we can try to correlate that information. But unfortunately, inside the product, there's no magic bullet that would be able to identify a loop in a DB2 transaction or an IMS transaction. Unfortunately, you still do have to go to those individual subsystem-specific tools to get real detailed information about them. But the neat thing is you can leverage them from this product in most cases, especially if you're talking about the performance analyzers, KIX or IMS.
So the key thing then is that when I'm in the workbench, I have all the, I'll say, identification information so that I can use that so that when I go to my more detailed tool, I'm extracting exactly what I want. Is that a fair statement?
That is a very fair statement, and that was exactly the line that we were going for, is that you would be able to gather the information you needed to leverage this subsystem-specific tooling if and when you needed it.
Okay, good. Thank you.
No problem.
And as a final reminder, if you'd like to ask a question or if you do have a follow-up question, please press star 1 at this time, and we'll pause for just a moment. And Mr. Martin, it does appear we have no further questions at this time. I'll turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing comments.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you to everybody for taking time out of your busy day to come and hear this presentation about this really neat tool that we have put out there. And I hope you saw some things that you liked and request some further information, because we always like to talk about the tool, hear comments from customers on ways we can make it better and make it more usable for them in the future. And thanks once again for attending.
And that does conclude today's teleconference. Thank you all for your participation.